Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Krishna Productions presents a narration of the book, A Second Chance, the story of a near-death experience. It was written by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. In this context, the word Acharya means a person who is perfected in God consciousness and who also teaches others, both by precept and example, how to perfect themselves. The book was published and copyrighted by the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust of Los Angeles, California in 1991, and all rights are reserved by it. And now I, Amala Bhaktadas, the narrator, offer my respectful obeisances to the lotus feet of my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, who is very dear to Lord Krishna, having taken shelter of his lotus feet. Srila Prabhupada, through his numerous books, recordings, and disciples, is kindly preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and delivering souls all over the world from the clutches of impersonalism, voidism, illusion, and ignorance. May he be pleased to inspire this humble narration with his spiritual potency, so that all who listen to it may be helped to develop pure, ecstatic love of God and return home back to Godhead to engage in eternal devotional service. We now begin with the introduction of the book. As the sinful Ajamil lay on his deathbed, he was terrified to see three fierce, human-like creatures coming to drag him out of his dying body and take him away to the abode of Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, for punishment. Surprisingly, Ajamil escaped this terrible fate. How? You'll find out shortly. You'll also learn many vital truths about the fundamental nature of the self and reality, so you can better prepare yourself for your own inevitable encounters with death and dying. Even today, people momentarily on the verge of death report encounters like Ajamil's, lending credibility to the idea that there is life after death. In 1982, George Gallup Jr. published a book called Adventures in Immortality, which contained results of a survey on American beliefs about the afterlife, including near-death and out-of-body experiences. 67% of the people surveyed said they believe in life after death, and 15% said they themselves had had some kind of near-death experience. The people who reported a near-death experience were then asked to describe it. 9% reported an out-of-body sensation, and 8% felt that a special being or beings were present during the near-death experience. The Gallup survey is intriguing, but it leaves unanswered this basic question. Is there any scientific evidence for near-death experiences, particularly of the out-of-body type? Apparently there is, from studies of people on the verge of death who, while supposedly unconscious, accurately report events relating to their physical body from a perspective outside it. Heart attack patients, accident victims, and soldiers wounded in battle have reported such experiences. Dr. Michael Sabum, a cardiologist at the Emory University Medical School, undertook a scientific study of such reports. He interviewed 32 cardiac arrest patients who reported out-of-body experiences. During a cardiac arrest, the heart stops pumping blood to the brain, and so a patient should be totally unconscious. Yet, 26 of the 32 patients reporting out-of-body experiences during cardiac arrest were able to give fairly accurate visual accounts of their resuscitation. And the remaining six gave extremely accurate accounts of the specific resuscitation techniques, matching confidential hospital records of their operations. The results of Sabum's study, detailed in his book, Recollections of Death, A Medical Investigation, published in 1982, convinced him of the reality of out-of-body experiences. He concluded that the mind was an entity distinct from the brain, and that the near-death crisis caused the mind and brain to split apart for a brief time. Sabum wrote, quote, "Could the mind which splits apart from the physical brain be, in essence, the soul which continues to exist after the final bodily death, according to some religious doctrines? As I see it, this is the ultimate question that has been raised by reports of the NDE or near-death experience." Unquote. The true dimensions of that ultimate question are thoroughly explored in A Second Chance by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founding spiritual master of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Thousands of years ago in India, the history concerning Ajamil and his near-death experience was related by the great spiritual master Shukdeva Goswami to his disciple King Parikshit. Their conversation is recorded in the sixth canto of the Sanskrit classic Srimad Bhagavatam, renowned as the ripened fruit of the tree of India's timeless Vedic literature. In 1975 to 76, in the course of translating the Srimad Bhagavatam into English, Srila Prabhupada translated the story of Ajamil. And, as with the rest of the work, in addition to the text, he provided an illuminating commentary on each verse. But this wasn't the first time Srila Prabhupada had explained the story of Ajamil. During the winter of 1970 to 71, Srila Prabhupada was traveling with some of his Western disciples in India. They had heard him speak about Ajamil several times, and at their request, he now gave a systematic series of lectures on the Ajamil story. Thus, A Second Chance consists of texts from the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, selections from Srila Prabhupada's commentary, and excerpts from transcriptions of his lectures during the 1970 to 71 India tour. The history of Ajamil is dramatic, powerful, and engaging. And the sharp philosophical and metaphysical debates that punctuate the action as Ajamil confronts the messengers of death and finds deliverance are bound to excite the interest of those concerned with life's deepest questions. Signed, The Publishers. Before beginning the actual narration of the book, we will first present a dramatization of it, vividly showing the temptation, suffering, realization, and final redemption of the main character, Ajamil.
My name is Ajamil, and I once lived in the city of Kanyakubja, India, many thousands of years ago. I was a young, upright Brahmin priest. But one day, I fell from the path of spiritual life and lost all of my good qualities. Let me tell you about it.
Thank you.
In my youth, I studied all the Vedic literatures. I was a reservoir of good character and conduct. I was very mild and gentle, and I kept my mind and senses under control. I was always truthful, knew how to chant the Vedic mantras, and was very pure. I always showed proper respect to my spiritual master, guests, and the elderly members of my household. Indeed, I was free from false prestige. I was benevolent to all living beings and never envied anyone. But one day, following the order of my father, I went to the forest to collect fruits and flowers. On the way home, I came upon a very lusty, low-class man, shamelessly embracing and kissing a prostitute. The man was smiling and singing and enjoying himself, as if this were proper behavior. Both the man and the prostitute were drunk. The prostitute's eyes were rolling in intoxication, and her dress, it had become loose, partially exposing her body. When I saw this prostitute, the dormant, lusty desires in my heart awakened, and in illusion, I fell under their control. I tried to remember the instructions of the scriptures, and with the help of my knowledge and intellect, I tried to control my lust. But because of the force of Cupid within my heart, I was unable to control my mind. After that, I always thought of the prostitute, and within a short time, I took her in as a servant in my house. I then gave up all my spiritual practices. I spent the money I had inherited from my father for presents for the prostitute, and even rejected my beautiful young wife, who came from a respectable Brahmin family. Then I got money any way I could, legally and illegally, robbing and gambling, and used to maintain the prostitute's sons and daughters. By the time I was 88 years old, I had fathered 10 sons by the prostitute. The youngest, a baby, was named Narayan, one of the names of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. I was very attached to my young son and derived great pleasure watching the child's early attempts to walk and talk. One day, without warning, the time of my death arrived. Terrified, I saw before me gruesome figures with fierce, twisted faces. These subtle beings, with ropes in their hands, had come to forcibly escort me to the court of Yamaraj, the Lord of Death. Seeing these ghoulish creatures, I became bewildered. And out of affection for my beloved child, who was playing just a short distance away, I began to cry loudly, "Narayan! Narayan!" With tears in my eyes, weeping for my young son, I unconsciously chanted the holy name of the Lord. Er hearing their master's name chanted with great feeling by me. The servants of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, arrived within a second. They appeared like Lord Vishnu himself. Their eyes were exactly like the petals of a lotus flower. They wore helmets of burnished gold, glimmering silk garments the color of topaz, and their perfectly formed bodies were decorated with garlands of sapphire and milk-white lotuses. They appeared fresh and youthful, and their dazzling effulgence illuminated the darkness of the death chamber. In their hands they held bows, arrows, swords, conch shells, clubs, discs, and lotus flowers. The Vishnu Dutas saw the servants of Yamaraj, the Yama Dutas, snatching my soul from the core of my heart. And with resounding voices they cried, "Stop! Stop!" The Yamadutas, who had never before encountered any opposition, trembled upon hearing the Vishnu Dutas' harsh command and asked,
"Who are you? Why are you trying to stop us? We are the servants of Yamaraj, the Lord of Death."
The agents of Vishnu smiled and spoke in voices as deep as the rumbling of rain clouds.
"If you are truly the servants of Yamaraj, you must explain to us the meaning of the cycle of birth and death. Tell us, who must enter this cycle and who must not?"
Yamadutas replied,
"The sun, fire, sky, air, demigods, moon, evening, day, night, the directions, water, land, and the supersoul, or the Lord within the heart, all witness the activities of everyone." "The candidates for punishment in the cycle of birth and death are those who are confirmed by these witnesses to have deviated from their religious duties. In proportion to the extent of one's religious or irreligious actions in this life, one must enjoy or suffer the corresponding reactions of karma in the next." "Originally, the living beings exist in the spiritual world as eternal servants of God. But when they give up the service of the Lord, they must enter the material universe, comprised of the three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. The living beings who desire to enjoy this material world come under the control of the modes. And according to their specific relationship with these modes, acquire suitable material bodies. A being in the mode of goodness obtains the body of a demigod. One in the mode of passion takes birth as a human. And one in the mode of ignorance enters the lower species. All of these bodies are like the bodies we experience in dreams. When a man goes to sleep, he forgets his real identity and may dream that he has become a king. He cannot remember what he was doing before he went to sleep, nor can he imagine what he will do upon waking. In the same way, when a soul identifies with a temporary material body, he forgets his real spiritual identity, as well as any previous lives in the material world. Although most souls in a human body have already transmigrated through all 8,400,000 species of life. The living entity thus transmigrates from one material body to another in human life, animal life, and life as a demigod. When the living entity gets the body of a demigod, he is very happy. When he gets a human body, he is sometimes happy, sometimes sad. And when he gets the body of an animal, he is always fearful. In all conditions, however, he suffers terribly, experiencing birth, death, disease, old age. His miserable condition is called samsara, or transmigration of the soul to different species of material life. The foolish embodied living entity, unable to control his senses or his mind, is forced to act according to the influence of the modes of material nature, even against his own desires. He is like a silkworm that uses its own saliva to create a cocoon, and then becomes trapped in it. The living entity traps himself in a network of his own fruitive activities, then can find no way to free himself. Thus, he is always bewildered and repeatedly dies and is reborn. Because of his intense material desires, a living entity takes birth in a particular family and receives a body like that of either the mother or the father. That body is an indication of his past and future bodies, just as one springtime is an indication of past and future springtimes. The human form of life is especially valuable because only a human can understand the transcendental knowledge that can free him from this cycle of birth and death. But Ajamil, he has wasted his human life. And before death, he did not undergo atonement. Therefore, because of his sinful life, we must take him to the court of Yamaraj. There, according to the extent of his sinful acts, he will be punished and then returned to the material world in a suitable body. After hearing the statements of the Yamadutas, the servants of Lord Vishnu, who are always expert in logic and argument, replied,
"How painful it is to see that those in charge of upholding religious principles are needlessly punishing an innocent person. Ajamil has already atoned for all of his sins. Indeed, he has atoned not only for sins performed in this life, but for those performed in millions of previous lives as well, because he chanted the holy name of Narayan in a helpless state of mind at the time of death. Therefore, he is now pure and eligible for liberation from the cycle of reincarnation. The chanting of the holy name of Lord Vishnu is the best process of atonement for a thief or a drunkard, or for one who betrays a friend or relative, for one who kills a priest, or for one who indulges in sex with the wife of his guru or another superior. It is also the best method of atonement for one who murders women, the king, or his father, for one who slaughters cows, and for all other sinful men. Simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Vishnu, such sinful persons may attract the attention of the Supreme Lord, who therefore considers, because this man has chanted my holy name, it is my duty to give him protection. One who chants the holy name of the Lord is immediately freed from the reactions of unlimited sins, even if he chants jokingly or for musical entertainment. This is accepted in the scriptures and by all learned scholars. If one chants the holy name of Lord Krishna and then dies in an accident or is killed by a deadly animal, from disease, or by a weapon, one is immediately freed from having to take birth again. As a fire burns dry grass to ashes, the holy name of Krishna burns to ashes all of one's karmic reactions. If a person, unaware of the potency of a medicine, takes that medicine, or is forced to take it, it will act even without his knowledge. Even if one does not know the value of chanting the holy name of the Lord, the chanting will still be effective in liberating one from reincarnation. At the time of death, Ajamil helplessly and very loudly chanted the holy name of the Lord, Narayan. That chanting alone has already freed him from having to take birth again for his sinful life. Therefore, do not try to take him to your master for punishment by another term of imprisonment in a material body.
The Vishnu Dutas then released me from the ropes of the servants of the Lord of Death. I came to my senses and, free from fear, paid my heartfelt respects to the Vishnu Dutas by bowing my head at their feet. But when the Vishnu Dutas saw that I was trying to say something to them, they disappeared. Then I wondered, was this a dream I saw, or was it reality? I saw fearsome men with ropes in their hands coming to drag me away. Where have they gone? And where are those four radiant persons who saved me? I then began to reflect on my life. Being a servant of my senses, how degraded I became. I fell down from my position as a saintly Brahmin and begot children in the womb of a prostitute. Indeed, I gave up my chaste and beautiful young wife. What's more, my father and mother were old and had no other friend or son to look after them. Because I did not take care of them, they lived with great pain and difficulty. It is now clear that a sinful person like myself should have been forced in his next life to suffer hellishly. I am such an unfortunate person, but now that I have another chance, I must try to become free from the vicious cycle of birth and death. I immediately renounced my prostitute wife and journeyed to Hardwar, a place of pilgrimage in the Himalaya Mountains. There I took shelter at a Vishnu temple where I practiced Bhakti Yoga, the yoga of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. When my mind and intelligence were fixed in perfect meditation on the form of the Lord, I again saw before me four celestial beings. Recognizing them as the same Vishnu Dutas who had saved me from the agents of death, I bowed down before them in joy. There, at Hardwar, on the banks of the Ganges, I gave up my temporary material body and regained my eternal spiritual form. Accompanied by the Vishnu Dutas, I boarded a golden aircraft and, passing through the airways, went directly to the abode of Lord Vishnu, never again to reincarnate in this material world. And I hope and pray that all of you who have now heard my story will do the same. Hare Krishna.